Those are the sounds of cows of Five Freedoms Dairy in West Loveland, Colorado. Dr. Kevin McSweeney is the dairy's owner. He told me about his background as a veterinarian and manager for industrial dairies and why he's focused on greater animal welfare standards for his small herd.
Well, my parents divorced and my mother moved into the city and my dad was in the country and had a farm. And one of his good friends was a large animal veterinarian. And so I started working with him as a child. And then my whole life has just been devoted to dairy cows. And first I was a commercial dairy selling to the co-op and pushing for maximum production. That was really the only way I could get a bank loan through the government, actually, is to dairy that way. And about 5 years ago, I reduced the size of my herd and built a small milk plant and started focusing more on the welfare and leaving the calves with their mothers. And yeah, my whole life in one way or another as an employee, manager, dairy veterinarian, and now a dairy owner and processor. So I've kind of seen all aspects of the industry.
So what about the way that typical dairies work? What did you see that you wanted to change?
So the thing that I think affects the dairy industry and the cow's existence, Lee, is just being a part of a commodity market. And commodity markets, you know, have no soul. They don't care about, you know, whether you're doing anything better or worse. They care about how much commodity you make and what price you get for it. And so Colorado had really embraced the immigrant labor force and dairies were much bigger here. And so I got to see the economies of scale that really makes the most profitable dairy is just being big. You know, it's all about maximizing production at the lowest cost.
What do you do differently with your herd?
So one of the things that's very important to me, and it's a factor in all animal-human relationships, was really driven into my head in vet school, is the human-animal bond, how important that is to a lot of people. And that was one of the most dramatic things to me, not ever touching your animals, not really having any relationship. And dairies under about 100 cows is where you really know every cow and can have a good relationship with your herd. So it seems like, you know, above that, things kind of fall apart a little bit and you have to have more employees and it's just impossible to have that relationship. So for me, being small is a big part of that. And right now I'm only milking 15 cows. I'd grow up to that 100 cow point, but I really wouldn't want to go beyond that again. The poster child for my dairy is we leave the cows and the calves together after birth. So all the dairies in this country and really around the world for the most part remove the calf almost immediately after birth, minutes to hours. And so leaving them together, you get better nutrition and more nutrition. And then that relationship, which I've now seen really affects for the mother too. You can see the psychological benefits. And beyond that, my cows live a lot longer. So, you know, I'm not pushing for maximum production. And so the cows aren't to the edge of the cliff and ready to fall off for the minute that their production falls off or they get sick. And then also nutritionally, I don't feed really any grain. All the dairies in the country really, I mean, even the organic ones feed a lot of grain and that pushes milk production, but it comes at the health of the cows. It's really difficult on the digestive systems of cows to feed a lot of grain. And then it affects the quality of the milk. So the butterfat content goes way down and some other components in the milk that affect the quality and the taste of it. And then on top of that, I don't have my cows on concrete. There's concrete when they come into the milking parlor, but otherwise they're on dirt or grass, which is much healthier for them, their feet and legs. And most dairies, especially large dairies out west, cows live the majority of their life on concrete. It's easier to manage cleaning up the manure, and so you don't have to have as many people, and it doesn't take as much time, but it's a lot harder on the cows.
So what does grain do exactly to cattle?
It depends on the body system and what they're using that energy for. But on the dairy side, you end up with a lot more milk and then more total pounds of fat and protein. My dairy, when I was feeding cows that way, we would average about 10 gallons per cow per day. Whereas my milk, right now, my cows average about 2 to 4 gallons per day. So a substantial difference in total production there.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Kevin McSweeney, veterinarian and founder of Five Freedoms Dairy in West Loveland, Colorado. What you're hearing are the rhythmic sounds of his farm's milking machines, which mimic the suckling of calves. Dr. McSweeney says the cows prefer the automated machines to being milked by hand. Because cows can sense people's moods, a machine is preferable to a person who might be feeling rushed or cranky. In this part of our interview, Dr. McSweeney explains why his dairy is not certified organic.
So your dairy, if I understand correctly, is not certified organic, but you follow a lot of organic practices anyway. Can you explain why it seems that you've chosen to not seek organic certification?
Yeah, so when people created the organic standards a few decades ago, they were concerned about the antibiotics. And so they wanted nothing to do with antibiotics at all. But antibiotics aren't horrible in and of themselves. The way we overuse them and don't manage properly and in a way that promotes more disease, that's not appropriate. But antibiotics have their place. There's almost no human on this planet that could be defined as certified organic. And so it puts a lot of pressure on animal agriculture. And especially the way we've defined our standards is if you ever have an animal get sick and you use antibiotics, that animal has to leave the farm and can never come back to that farm. And so as a veterinarian, what I found are two things, negative things happen around that is the small organic farmer who has a human-animal bond with their cows really loves that animal. A lot of times it's those young teenagers, a five-month-old calf, and this time of year when the temperature swings 50, 60 degrees in a day, you can get some pneumonias that just pop up. And so you've got an animal that's now labored breathing, got a temperature. And there are some times where animals cure themselves, but generally not without long-lasting problems to their lungs and other things. So it's best to kind of treat early. So that small farmer sees this animal and says, God, you know, if I treat it, it has to leave. And I love this animal. And so let's wait till tomorrow. It'll get better. And then what happens is you wait. And finally, when you treat, you're too late. And that animal's chronic and it doesn't respond. So it suffers in that way. And then on the other side of it, you've got your large organic dairies, which are industrial scale, which is the vast majority of the organic milk produced comes from monstrous dairies. And so on that dairy, there's no human-animal bond, really. That animal has a dollar value associated with it. And as a certified organic cow, it has a value of several thousand dollars. The manager, owner, whoever makes the decision for treatment protocols generally would rather roll the dice and see if that animal can get better on its own to maintain that higher organic value. And so the animal suffers in that situation from not getting treated appropriately. But those are just our standards. In some European countries, they have organic standards where you can treat the animal, but it has a very prolonged amount of time before their food could re-enter the food chain. And so the most common disease that you would treat a milking dairy cow for is mastitis, so a mammary infection. And a lot of times we would treat with an antibiotic tube that you would inject into the udder after you've milked it out. And then that antibiotic attacks that bacteria locally there within the mammary gland. Generally, those have a withhold. So from the last treatment to when you could put milk back in the tank for the human food chain would be 3 to 5 days. And so what I generally will do is if I have an animal like that, I'll treat, but I'll go 2 to 3 weeks before I'll put that in. So 3 to 5 times the legal standard on that so that there's no chance that there's any residue really left in that, but that the animal gets treated appropriately. for me to keep my sanity and look myself in the mirror and feel that I'm doing my cows the best job for them, treating that way is the best for me. And again, I think there are a lot of cattle that suffer to maintain that certified organic standard, you know, just because it's a perception type thing, but there's no real risk to humans.
And I want to backtrack to a couple of questions I had. Just how long can a cow be milked? I mean, in years-wise?
Well, so the world record for one continuous lactation, I think, is 9 years. Normally, a year to two is about the most that you're going to have, you know, any production that's worth bringing her into the parlor and milking her for.
I guess on average, how many years of milk can you...
Yeah, so that's something that's changed dramatically and really just recently. Now in the U.S., the average lifespan is 2 to 3 lactations, so 4 to 5 years old. So cows calve generally at about 2 years, and then every year they're having another lactation.
So when the females can no longer lactate, what typically on a big dairy farm, what happens? Are they sold for meat or other products?
Yeah,
or?
Meat. Dairy cows account for a big percentage of the meat that's consumed in this country. So it used to be dairy cows, after their productive life on the dairy, went to slaughter and their meat got ground up for ground beef. But with advancement in meat technology, a lot of dairy cows go into higher cuts because dairy cows are older and have more connective tissue and it's a little tougher. But with the way you hang meat and do different things, you can break down some of that connective tissue and then it tastes more tender. So a lot of microwavable roasts, and all Arby's meat is dairy cows. And we import a lot of beef from Brazil and Argentina, but that's to make up the deficit really of the ground beef that we used to get really from our dairy cows. So yeah, when they end their productive life, yeah, get sold generally through a sale barn. They're scattered up and down the Front Range and out like Greeley, Fort Collins. There's sale barns there where buyers come from the packing plants and they'll fill up those big cattle trailers and then they'll go kind of straight away to the slaughter plants.
Do you do something different with, I know yours live longer, but mm-hmm. do you have to sell them as well?
So it depends. I try not to. Some of my favorite cows are retired and will never go. They'll spend their lives on the dairy until they're old, and then they have to put them down or they drop dead. And so they'll live out their lives there. But you know, they cost money. And so you have the realities of, you know, life and money. And so I hadn't sold any cows to a sale barn in 3 years, but I just had to sell some the other day. There's pet cows around that are in retirement. They'll cost me $5 to $8 a day and just feed. And so that adds up pretty quick. And so, you know, I'd like to not, but you run the risk of putting the whole business and making everybody dead if I can't continue to pay the bills.
Just listening in, that's Dr. Kevin McSweeney, veterinarian and founder of Five Freedoms Dairy in West Loveland, Colorado. In the following segment, Dr. McSweeney talks about the tough realities of what happens when dairy cattle are no longer producing milk and why his products have a naturally sweeter, richer taste than industrial dairy products. And these sounds are his cows munching on hay.
You have a way of, like, saying goodbye? I mean, it sounds like because you're very bonded to a lot of the animals.
Yeah, the ones that are destined for beef, I try not to get too bonded to, you know, because I know their ultimate fate. But the earliest, really, they'll go to slaughter is 3 years, but a lot of times they're pushing 5 if we're doing grass-fed. Whereas when you go to the store, the steak you buy, the animal is about 1.5 years old, less than 2 years. So it's a very short life. And so I feel they're getting a good life, but I still don't like getting too attached to them. The ones that I have a little more difficult time when they get on the trailer or something happens are the milk cows. But as I said, the ones that I've got the strongest attachment to, they're retiring on the place. So the hardest part gets there if, as they get older and have some disease process happen, that it's in their best interest to be put down, to euthanize. And so definitely have some, you know, tough words, goodbyes with those. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, can you tell me about your products, what you provide and where people can find them?
Yeah, so I've got a small licensed plant that I built inside of a 40-foot shipping container, and we're a little limited in the products we can produce. So right now I sell milk and just one type of regular milk. I don't separate off the fat. The milk you buy in the store, what they do is when it comes in the processing plant is they pull off all the fat and then they add back the 1%, 2%, or 3.25% for whole, whereas I don't do that at all. The more you dink with milk, the more you mess with it, it's not really good for milk. You release some components of fatty acids and different things that can affect the shelf life and the quality of the milk. And so my milk, it goes right into my vat pasteurizer, and I pasteurize it at a low temperature, short time. So the lowest temperature, shortest time that's legal in this country, which is 145 degrees for 30 minutes, which still leaves plenty of probiotic kind of enzymes and bugs in there that people are seeking with their raw milk, but there's zero risk of your child dying or your grandmother or you aborting that fetus, which, you know, is rare, but it does happen. The last recorded death from raw milk was here in Boulder about 15 years ago. There was a little child that died from raw milk, and there were a few others in that outbreak that almost died. So for me, definitely raw milk has more of probiotic activity, but it's about balancing risk. I couldn't look myself in the mirror if I killed somebody's child or aborted their fetus. And as a veterinarian, you know, I saw how easy it was for things to slip through the cracks. Again, people say, I trust it. It's a good farm. It's clean. It's like, it can be as clean as you want. You know, it just takes a goose landing with a weird strain of salmonella, or that little boy that died here in Boulder was just an E. coli. It was an H0157, but that's very common on dairies. And the Shigella toxin attacks kidneys and can shut your kidneys down instantly. And that's how he died. And so for me, I don't think the positives of the raw milk outweigh the negatives of it. And then I do chocolate milk. My chocolate milk's very popular. So the dairy industry, fat and protein make the most money. And so they don't like giving away fat and protein if they don't have to. And so if you look at all the chocolate milk that you buy in the store, you almost never find it above 2%. And the chocolate powder you add to make chocolate milk is bitter. And so you need to have something to mask that bitterness. And you either do it with sugar or you do it with fat. And so the dairy industry would much rather do it with sugar, which is a whole lot cheaper than what they can sell their fat for. And then they load it up with sugar. Whereas mine, I use my milk, which again averages that 5 to 10% fat. And so my chocolate milk has a quarter to a half of the sugar that you would find in any other chocolate milk. And so I'm pretty proud about that. And then I do two strained yogurt, so a Greek and then a Skyr, an Icelandic style. So the Greek has got that bitter kind of acidic taste to it, and the Skyr is really mild on that spectrum. But if you're looking for something that's more probiotic, then the yogurt definitely is up your avenue there. I also do a ricotta. My ricotta is quite different, and I make mine from my full-fat milk, and so it makes a more textured ricotta with a lot more flavor. And so for the ricotta addicts, they really appreciate my ricotta. And then when I have time and milk, I'll make mozzarella too. And so I hope to, as I mentioned, I'm kind of limited in my milk plant in space and equipment to be able to do stuff. The next thing I'd like to get to doing more hard cheeses, but I need to expand my facility and have a press and then a way to age and store that cheese. And then ultimately, I'd like to get to making butter. But so legally to make the butter, you need to pull off that fat. And you do that with a machine called a separator. But the industry is so focused on economies of scale that the cheapest, the smallest one I can find that would work for me is a used, refurbished one. A guy up in Minnesota redoes them, and he's got one for $100,000. And so it'll be a little bit till I can cash flow that. And then after you do that, you can make cream and half and butter. And so it opens up the doors to a bunch of other products that I definitely want to have, but I just can't swing $100,000 for that piece of equipment right now. So,
Did COVID spur you to start your own dairy, or had you already been setting the plans?
No, I'd already been setting the plan and was in the process of finishing building the plant, which got delayed a little bit. So if I had been 5 months earlier in getting my plan approved, I really could have taken advantage of when all there wasn't any dairy because the plants had some labor issues. Because for me, I don't have a big labor force, and so it's all me. And when it's all you, you're not seeing other people that spread virus to you. But for me, that first year, my focus has always been the farmers markets, because one, this dairy is not only for my sanity and to do what I feel is right, but it's also the dairy industry is very good at marketing and telling an idealized story that isn't the reality. And so a lot of people are busy and have their blinders up and aren't aware of the realities of the industry. And so for me, the farmers market and having that direct connection with people is a way to educate people too and try to affect change within the industry by making people more aware. And that's where that first year at COVID, which made no sense that they shut down the markets and funneled everybody into Walmart and King Supers. It's just like the dumbest thing you could do from a virology standpoint. Like, let's go inside, you know, as opposed to out in the bright sun. But that's what it was. And so that really kind of held me back as far as sales, and developing a customer base that first year. But since then, it's really been just the amount of milk I can produce to try to keep up, especially when the markets are in full swing. So I do Longmont, Boulder, Netherland, and then three in Denver. I've got enough of a customer base that demand is really strong.
You also supply some restaurants and some small, maybe not groceries, but like specialty stores?
Yeah, I do. So especially around here in Boulder, Moxie Bread and North Boulder, Nude Foods, just right up the road here, carry several of my products. I'm in the South Street Market in Louisville. I sell the Frasca restaurant here in town, the Pharaoh restaurant over there in Niwot, and the Academy, the retirement community up on the hill there, I sell to them. In Denver, St. Killian's Cheese Shop, and then also in Fort Collins, I sell at the Mountain Market, the food co-op there on Mountain Avenue. And then the off-season, I have CSA customers.
What's the best place for people to find all this information? Your website?
So my website, www.fivefreedomsdairy.com is the website.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it. It was really fascinating to hear all this, everything that you've told me I wouldn't know otherwise. So,
well, I appreciate it. And thanks for giving me the platform to spread the word. Again, educating people, I think, is critical to affecting change in the industry. And improving the welfare is something that means a lot to me. So thanks for helping me out with that, Benita.
Thank you. Yeah.
That was Dr. Kevin McSweeney, veterinarian and founder of Five Freedoms Dairy in West Loveland, Colorado. His products can be found at specialty stores, farmers markets, and in chef-prepared restaurant meals in Denver, Boulder, and Fort Collins. He also runs a CSA. For A Public Affair, I'm Benita Lee.
What do you think?